This is Pivot Perspectives with Chris O'Byrne, the show that takes you around the world to share interviews with some of the most successful and relevant people on the planet. Hear their stories and get the most important business lessons they've learned on their road to success, and get exclusive access on how to implement their success into your life and business. Pivot Perspectives is brought to you by the Strategic Advisor Board and your host, Chris O'Byrne.
Jason Hunt, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation, Chris.
I am excited for this interview because you're the first one I have met in person before I did the interview. And, you know, in this world of Zoom and online video studio events and everything, it was a rare pleasure for me. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
I would like to dig into your teaching career, because that's what led you up to where you're at now with what you're currently doing. So why did you get into teaching? Let me ask you that question. And what did you teach?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. People that knew me when I was young probably would be surprised that I went into teaching, mostly because I was that introverted kid that sat in the classroom and hoped the teacher would never call on him, right? That was kind of my story. But I liked a certain aspects of education. I liked all the data processing. I liked keeping track of papers and grades and the kind of the structure of teaching. And so interestingly, that's what led me into the classroom. I mean, I wanted to be able to, you know, teach what I learned about social studies and English as a second language. Those are the two concepts that I taught. But really and truly, if I break it all down, I was just fascinated by the logistical aspect of schools and education and teaching, because my brain's just wired that way. I'm wired in regards to processes and logistics and tasks and stuff. And that's how I got first into it. And then I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the kids and the teachers and everything about it.
I have found that people like you that are, again, fascinated and good at processes and strategies are also pretty good at taking complex subjects and making them easy for people to understand.
I hope so. Yeah. Social studies is not a subject that a lot of kids come home from school saying, I love my teacher, right? It's usually one that tends to be a little drier or more boring for people because there's so much. I mean, we're trying to cover the entire history of the world in a semester, and how do you really do that? But I was intentional at trying to break those subjects down and really pull out the key pieces that students needed to understand and what the lessons could be from some of our learnings. And then I threw in all kinds of like engaging activities too, because I just knew if I didn't have them engaged in the classroom, there's no way I could be able to share with them the content I wanted to share.
So what did you learn along the way about how to engage with students?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question, because it's what I use now. Honestly, interacting and engaging with students is pretty much the same thing on how to interact and engage with adults. First off, we've got very short spans of attention. It's really hard for anybody to pay attention to one thing for any longer than 10 minutes. It just is. Yeah. In fact, we had this little thing in education where you had to change activities for every minute they are year old. In other words, if you're working with 15-year-olds, every 15 minutes, you should significantly be changing activities, right? Now, you would think that would apply to 60-year-olds too, that you can go on for 60 minutes. No. I think there's a cap somewhere around that 20-minute mark where it's like, okay, now like people, they just need different things. So, you know, I'd have them stand up and do partner conversations. I recall one time we were talking about World War II and the deaths that occur. I mean, that was a significant war for this world and so much tragedy. And how do you convince a 14-year-old to have compassion to the millions of deaths that occur? You know, how do you really translate that into somebody's brain? So I cornered off a little section of my room and I found all these old newspapers we weren't using as a school anymore. And I had kids like literally rip up slips of paper and keep track of how many slips of paper they were adding to this little corner of my room. We were trying to get to a million, right? Oh. We just wanted 1 million slips of paper, which for a kid, it was like, oh yeah, a million, billion. People are trillionaires now, right? But then they start doing the papers and it's like, wow, this is a lot. And I had every period of the course of a couple of months, this wasn't the lesson. But when a kid finished early with their, you know, with their project or what they were working on, or when they came in early for class, or sometimes kids would come in during lunch or before school and after school because they wanted to add to it. And we did. We got to a million. But man alive, that was, I mean, that was just such an impactful thing for the kids, because now they knew, like, that's 1 million. And how many million deaths occurred in World War II? Right. It just gave them some perspective.
Yeah.
Which I think is a powerful thing. Like, how do you take book learning and transfer that into something that's maybe a little more tangible for people to get a hold of?
Yeah. It's somehow you have to make it concrete, because if it's all abstract, it is so hard to grasp, especially at that age. So along the way, you went into, I won't say management, but leadership. You became a principal. What drove you to do that?
If I were honest with you, Chris, money. I mean, money drives a lot of people. Obviously, I wanted to make a bigger impact, because I think I figured out a few things on how to be a good teacher. Students enjoyed what I was doing. I got lots of good feedback. And I thought, you know, maybe there's some things that I could share with other teachers. So perhaps I could look at administration. But in all reality, I was tired of doing the coaching, and tired of, you know, keeping track of the cash box for hockey games, and tired of taking on all these extra things just to basically make a living. We've got four kids. We had a mortgage. You know, it's how do you really try to survive on a teacher's salary? And that's tough. My heart goes out to every teacher, because I feel your pain. And so when I looked at administration, and I was encouraged, I had other administrators that thought, hey, Jason, you might be good at this gig. And so when I looked at that and the difference in regards to salary, I thought, you know, maybe this is something I could go into, first to provide for my family, and secondly, to have an impact on the teachers in regards to how we can really engage students.
Yeah, yeah. Being a former high school teacher myself, I know how tough it is, both financially and again, it's a tough job. And I think people who aren't in the profession or know somebody who is, they don't realize how hard it is. Like, oh, you just have school hours and you have summers off. And it's like, boy, you have no clue.
Exactly right.
So what was the transition from education into what you're doing now?
Yeah. So I'll answer that one again with a one-word answer: failure. That truly is what led me into doing what I do now. So I got into administration, and just recall, I was that introverted kid in elementary school that didn't feel comfortable speaking in front of others and had no idea what personal relationships were, but processes and organization and structure, that made sense to me, right? So even though I'd been in education, I'd figured out how to get along with kids here and there, when I got into administration, specifically when I started leading the school as a principal, I kind of reverted back to my natural skill sets of organization and process. And we focused on that, and we made the school beautiful, because there were some significant things that we needed to change in order to kind of get things flowing better. But what I did not realize is that's not the best way to lead. I mean, you need organization, you need structure, you need processes. We all understand efficiencies. We understand continuous improvement. All that's extremely important. Don't get me wrong on that. But if you've not taken time to connect to your people and build those personal relationships with individuals to establish trust, then it doesn't matter how great your system is. Nobody's going to follow you into that system. And I didn't recognize this until my second year leading as a principal. I thought things were going pretty well, because the first year was great. People were nice to me and they invited me to social events and did what I told them to do. I thought, okay, I'm a good leader. This is going well, right? But year two, the gloves came off. The teachers realized, okay, hold on. We've given him a year and we still don't have relationships with him, right? We've given him a year and he's still not listening to us. He's not seeking for our input. We've given him a year and we don't feel like we know who Jason is yet. So we're not ready to follow this guy down the road. Now, granted, I was 32 years old too, so I was a little young, which was a disadvantage in this situation. And things just fell apart. I realized the culture in our school was awful. It was when I came in. It was even worse since I'd been leading it. We were trying to do a few things about student discipline and attendance, and it was failing miserably. We had really serious discipline issues happening in our school. attendance problems. And then come to standardized testing scores, we weren't doing well at all either. Again, I'm a data junkie. I can pretty much make data say anything I wanted to say. But I couldn't. I couldn't find anything worthwhile to be proud of in the school. And so I wanted to quit. You know, I wanted to give up. It wasn't working. I was doing like most of what we would do, you know, you and your audience. What do we do when it's not work? We work harder, right? We go in earlier. We stay later. We give up weekends and family events. And we just put in the time thinking that time is going to equate success. And it doesn't. It's got to be the right kind of activities during that time. And so I was frustrated. I was ready to give up. And literally I'd written out my letter of resignation. I hadn't sent it yet because I thought, you know, might be wise to talk to the wife before I send this in. So I came home. It was a long day. I was tired. I was done. And I promised myself, I'm not going back. I've just tried too much and it's not working. And I'd mentioned this to my wife and she wouldn't accept my resolution. She's like, no, you have to go to school. I'm like, you don't get it. Like I hadn't shared with her all this head trash that had been going on. I had self-doubt, probably a lot of anxiety, even some depression, not clinical, but enough where it was affecting me and my sleeping patterns and eating and those sorts of things. So I hadn't shared with her a whole lot of that. And so I said, no, you don't understand. I can't go back to school. Here's what has really been going on. And she, with a little bit of compassion, but really mostly a concern for our family, turned to me and said, Jason, you have to go back. We've got a mortgage. We have four kids. We need a regular paycheck. Like we need healthcare. You have to go back to school. And so, Chris, we, as all things in marriage, we compromised, which meant I went back to school.
I know that compromise.
Yeah, you get it, right? But this time it was different. This time I was like, what can I do differently as a leader? Like, where am I not getting it? Why is it not working? And I asked people these questions. I became humble and vulnerable and went over to pretty much anybody that would allow me to ask the questions and sought feedback. I wanted to know what I was doing that wasn't working. And almost 100% of the feedback came back and said, you don't have people skills. Like it's that connecting piece. It's listening pieces. It's asking questions. It's delegating. It's trusting your team. It's all those things we call soft skills that I just wasn't using because that's just not natural to me. Like naturally, I like the process. I like the strategies. I like the flow of things. Unnaturally is the people stuff. So I stayed away from it. And it ended up in failure.
So how did you learn those people skills?
Trial and error, probably. I knew I needed it, right? So my wife said, we're not going to quit. And I'm a pretty determined guy. Anybody that's an entrepreneur probably should know, like, if you want something bad, it's going to take a lot of work to get there. And I don't give up too easily. So she reignited the fire in me saying, yep, you can be a successful principal. And after I'd listened to a lot of people, I compiled a few key pieces that I needed to make sure I focused on moving forward. One of those was expressing appreciation to our staff. They felt like I didn't appreciate what they do. And as you've mentioned, teaching's a hard thing. You know, for any teachers that are out there listening to this, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't know what it's like to be a teacher, go find a friend. Go find somebody and get a sense as to what they go through each and every day. And they felt like I didn't have any appreciation for them. So I knew first and foremost, I need to make sure that I'm giving them appreciation. Secondly, I was in my office way too much. Again, data junkie, right? Love computers. That's where I spent my time. Everything's organized on electronically now. So I knew I had to get out of my classroom and just wander around with no intention at all, except to build relationships, ask questions, observe, see what's going on, share a few thoughts, improve my communication skills, you know, that kind of stuff. But it all happened outside of the class, outside of the office. So that was another one that I needed to do. And then the third one, and this one's a little harder for me because I struggle with delegation and empowering people. I think that I can do it the best, and the way that I do it is the best. It's the most efficient. It is the right way to do it. And so just let me do it, right? I'm sure you and some others can resonate to that. So the feedback came was like, Jason, let us be part of this. Like, let us take on some of the burden of running this school. There's a lot of dynamics going on, but we also have different skill sets and experiences. We can help you. And for me, that meant the world, right? And that gave me enough courage and confidence to say, yeah, okay, I'm going to pass this piece on, or here's a project or a situation at the school or something that needs to be done or organized or planned. I'm going to empower you to do this, and I'm just going to back away. Now, I took about every strength in my entire body to do that, but I knew it was the right thing to do. And so it took a little practice, but interestingly, although these skills might not come natural, they don't take very long to learn because you see they needed feedback. We turned the entire school around in 2 years. In 2 years, we had teachers requesting to transfer into our school. Our data was some of the best in all of Southern Minnesota. We had incredible culture. Teachers were loving working there. They were approving of my leadership and where I was at. But there was also lots of teams running things too. So it wasn't me. It was like we transformed this whole thing, and we all felt so proud about that. In 2 years' time, that's all it took. Once I learned how to be humble and vulnerable.
It says a lot that you had enough personal insight into your own self and your own shortcomings to, one, realize that you had shortcomings, especially at that young of an age, and then two, to go about changing that. You know, you're pushed to grow, and that's such a important skill set for people to have, to be able to push themselves to grow and to grow. And at some point, you realized that your expertise and your talents were going to be better used doing something else outside of that field of education. So how did you start your consulting training business, and what was it like in the beginning?
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful transition. A couple of things happened. So we turned the school around, and then our community voted on a bond to combine a couple of schools. I was in charge of the 7th and 8th graders. And there was another standalone school that had just the 6th graders. So people would go through elementary school up through 5th grade, and then the 6th grade, and then the 7th and 8th. That's a lot of transitions for young kids. So it was the right thing for our community to do. We passed the bond. It was the right thing to be able to add onto our building and combine those 3 grades together. Our superintendent came out to us and said, hey, here's the situation. We don't need as many principals as we currently have because we don't have as many schools as we once did. So we need somebody to be able to take a severance. He was hoping actually that I would, mostly because he didn't quite think that I was ready yet to lead this brand new school based on some of my failures and mistakes. You know, he'd recognize we turned things around, but I'd been on an improvement plan. Like this was not good. Okay. And so he believed that maybe I wasn't the best one to take that next position. So I saw this as an opportunity of thinking, you know, maybe there's something here that I could share with others. In the worst of it, I ended up hiding in a portable classroom. Several days over the course of several months, I'd show up to work, I'd do the mandatory meetings, the announcements, welcome the kids or whatever, and then just go hide in a portable classroom, basically freaking out. Like I don't know what to do next, and I don't even want to face it, right? So when I left or had an opportunity to leave the school, I thought, you know, maybe my goal could be to help provide these tools, these people-centric tools, to leaders that are kind of like me, and perhaps a few less of them will enter a portable classroom. Maybe I can just help people avoid their portable classroom. And that really has driven me. Now, I had no idea how to start that, right? I didn't know how to market. I didn't know how to advertise. I didn't know how to run a business. I knew how to teach, and I knew how to administrator in school. That's what I knew how to do. So I needed some support and probably some content. I mean, I had a few tools, but not enough to go and start a whole training and speaking business. And so I happened to find, actually, my father-in-law sent me a link, a Facebook link, to the John Maxwell Leadership Team. And I'd heard of John Maxwell. I'd read some of his books in some light transition, right? He helped me teach, or he taught me some people-centric skills and understanding how leaders can be people-centric. But I'd never seen him in person, and I didn't know a whole lot about him. So he sent me this link, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know, for one price, I can get in with a lifetime membership and teach a lot of his content and have classes on how to market and how to advertise and how to run a business and all this stuff that I didn't know. And so I jumped in. I'm like, head first, let's do this thing. So I went from six figures to zero figures, which is tough, but at least I had like a support system there to teach me how to take that next step.
Yeah, gave you that framework. So what were some of the failures in the beginning of your business and getting things going, getting established?
You know, there was a lot of learning. I reflect back to those first couple of years. First off, it was a lot of work. So I did have a severance. So it wasn't exactly six figures and no figures. But so there was a time period there where I could be okay financially with the family to build some things up. After 1 year had passed and that severance had already expired and we're really wondering what's going to happen next, I'd made about $5,000 in the business. Now, I don't know about you, but raising a family of four and a wife and a mortgage with $5,000 doesn't really work. The math doesn't add up, right? And so I was like, well, what's next? Like, obviously it needs something. And I actually went back and started applying at schools again. I wasn't sure it was going to work out. And ended up getting some interviews. One school district was really interested in me. They were just north of the Twin Cities in Minnesota. And the position they were interested in hiring me for actually paid more than the principal position I was in before. I thought, you know, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the place that I take. And they had called me and they said they needed one final interview. And this is an interview with the school board before everything gets approved. I was out in Utah at the time visiting family. And so I talked to them and I said, okay, well, I got to talk to my wife, my family, and see if I can hop on a flight because they needed to do it soon. I see if I can hop on a flight and come back early to come and do this final interview. And so I hung up the phone and I went over to my wife and I said, hey, here's the situation. She was familiar with it. I said, they just called and it looks like if I'm going to do this, I need to leave now and get back and do this interview. What do you think I should do? And she just looked at me and she goes, well, you know what you need to do. And I said, I think I do, but can you just say it out loud? she did. She's like, you've worked so hard in building this business. Why would you leave that now? Like, you need to stay in that. And so with her faith, I called up the individual and told him, you know, very openly, I was honest with him, the situation. He understood. A little disappointed, but he understood. And I just continued on. The next day, I got $17,000 of business.
Oh my goodness.
Which is just incredible. So what's the lesson in there? I think the lesson in there is keep focused on pounding the pavement, right? Don't get distracted, right? It's going to work if you're doing the right things long enough. I think some people get into this business or sometimes they start any business and they think, oh gosh, you know, you look at that person, look at that, how much money they're making or success they have, how many products are getting out the door, whatever it is. And they think that happened overnight. And champions are only recognized in the ring. What people don't understand what it took to become the champion. And if I could give any guidance to anybody, it'd be like just keep pounding that pavement, keep going. Because that was a part, one of my failures, I just wanted to give up. That's why I went back and started doing these interviews, as I wanted to give up. I think the second biggest mistake that I made is I didn't invest the money for my own personal development. I was trying to do this on my own besides the John Maxwell team. But what I needed was a really good sales coach. Later on, I got one through the Sandler Sales program, right? I joined in with them or whatever and got some great instruction and feedback from them. So I got that. But it wasn't until later on. I should have done that more at the beginning. I didn't join the National Speakers Association, which is full of people that are doing what I'm doing and what I wanted to do. I kind of knew about it, but there's a price tag to get in. And so I didn't join them. What would I do differently? I would have joined them at the beginning because here it is like mentors and other individuals are doing exactly what I wanted to do. And I just thought I could do it on my own, read some books, watch some YouTube videos, listen to some podcasts, and I could figure that out. And from the beginning, I probably should have brought in more help, even though there was a price tag to that. And that would have helped me certainly in the first year. And certainly, you know, I'm on a great trajectory, but the trajectory could have been even greater. Had I started that way.
There's some really good lessons learned. So let's get into your specific methodology and training and what it is you do. Let's tell me about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So this has been years in the making. I'm on year 8 now of the business. So I left education 8 years ago. I joined the John Maxwell team. I taught his content for probably the first 2 or so, all the while thinking about what's mine. You know, what does Jason stand for? What tools and strategies can I really teach? And who's my audience? Because that takes time to figure out some of those things. And now I'm to the place where I'm really clear on my audience, and every tool that I teach, every strategy, every concept, every lesson that I teach, it's my content. Now it's infused with some John Maxwell stuff, because when you're influenced by mentors, it's hard to unmentor yourself, right? It's part of my belief system, right? But what I focus on now are 2 things. So I run 2 parts of my business. One's a speaking side. It's about 35% of my business. And that's your typical like keynote or breakout speaker. When you go to a conference, you got 400 or 500 people, or even 1,000, 2,000 people there, and they need a little inspiration. They need some good messages about, you know, how to find success in whatever they're trying to do. And so that's the keynote speaking and the breakout speaking aspect of my business. In that, I focus on influence and how we can be able to make an impact in people's lives by developing our influence through 4 components: care, connecting with other people, collaborating with them on their growth, and having the courage to make difficult decisions and be vulnerable. So care, connection, collaboration, courage. So my message is always surrounded around those 4 concepts. And, you know, through storytelling and some practical tools and some personal experiences, I try to motivate audiences to say, you know what, I can make a big difference in this world. Whether I have a title of leadership or whether I don't have a title of leadership, I can make a difference. And I can do so by growing in care, connection, collaboration, courage. That's a speaking aspect of this business. The other 65% is the training side of the business, where I take what I first taught, and then we really get detailed in regards to these 4 concepts. So I have actually 4 published books, one on each: care, connection, collaboration, courage. In each of the books is in, there we go, right there, yes. within each of the books is somewhere between 9 to 12 tools. And so what I do is I contract with companies to do ongoing training over the course of time, infusing their participants with these tools of care, connection, collaboration, courage. And what I don't do, which would be easier, honestly, if I did it this way, is the spray and pray method. In other words, could I teach all my stuff in 2 or 3 full days? Yeah, Chris, I probably could. I probably could. But by the end of day 3, how much are you really going to remember? You know, you look at the stats, the percentages, it's just sad. Let's just call it out. It's sad how much we remember when we do that much content all at one time. So it doesn't fit well with me. It didn't fit well with me as an educator. I mean, I knew as with students, if I have them for 49 minutes, there's a certain amount of content I can get in there, but anything more than that certain amount, they're not going to remember it, right? How do they grow as students? It's the fact they have me for a semester or they have me for a year. And over the course of that time, they'll grow. Same thing happens in organizations. So I focus primarily with like supervisors and managers. And, you know, I like more of the frontline type leadership. And I say, let's do this. Let's meet for maybe 3 hours, half a day. And we'll meet half a day once a month for the next 6 months or 8 months or 10 months, depending on what some of the objectives are and how much of the curriculum we'd like to bring in with the tools. I give them homework during the session to complete between sessions. We fill the session, it's discussion-based, it's tool-based, right? Not a whole lot of philosophy, very heavy on practical, simple things that people can do right from the gate, right? You don't even have to have a master's degree to understand this stuff. This is like, and they're memorable. For example, we talk about mind your monkeys. We talk about how monkey can be a task of delegating to somebody. And I give them 3 different things, you know, 3 ways to respond when somebody's been delegated a task and they bring that monkey back to you. Now, normally as leaders, we get really comfortable like, oh yeah, you want me to solve your problem for you? You want me to have answers? Yeah, I'm good at solving problems. I'm actually good at having answers. It makes me feel good to share these things too. So why don't I take that monkey back? And I'm just going to solve this problem for you. We do it as leaders all day long, every day. We just do, which is a disservice to those that we lead, right? So I physically have a monkey out. We call it Mind Your Monkeys. I give them 3 strategies on how to keep that monkey on the backs of other individuals. So they're practical, relevant, and memorable tools. Because I can say monkey to any one of my audiences, and they know instantly exactly what I know, I'm talking about. Yeah. Like, there you go. Oh, yeah. How's your monkeys? Oh, shoot. I haven't been doing very good in that lately. Things have been busy. I know they've been busy, but why? Because you're not using your monkeys, right?
Yes.
So simple, practical, relevant tools. We infuse that within a session. We finish it off. We sign homework. I follow up with videos, and I follow up with email reminders. We come back the next session, and then I build into this accountability buddies. So maybe, Chris, you and I are going through the training together. We now become accountability buddies, which means we sit next to each other. And when the session starts up again, I'm going to, I, as the instructor, will give the accountability buddies time to talk to each other. Hey, what did you do? What didn't you do? I've got a binder. I got handouts. All the homework happens on yellow sheets. So you open up your yellow sheets. You share with each other what worked, what didn't work. If you didn't do it, why didn't you get to it? If you did do it, talk to us about that. And then we do call outs with the whole group. Because it's easy to talk about this stuff, but it's a whole lot harder to put into practice. So I find that spanning it over the course of time and building in some of these accountability pieces and then teaching simple, practical, memorable tools, it seems to be the magic formula. It really does. It just works. And it's so fun to be able to get into organization at the beginning and then watch the transformation of what happens with the leaders after 6 months or 8 months. It's significantly different because the formula just works.
So you're able to obviously apply a lot of what you learned as an educator into what you're doing now, the jigsaw groups and the different methods of learning. And so tell me about giving a crap.
I was hoping you'd ask about this. Yes, exactly. I've got my little visual here. Here it is. Chris, I am starting a give a crap movement. That's what I want to start. If you recall from my story, the first thing that our teacher said is, Jason, we just don't know if we're appreciated. And I would dare argue that that probably is the number one concern in most organizations. If you look at the data, 87% of anybody that leaves an organization is probably leaving because they don't feel like they're appreciated. They don't feel like anybody cares about them. They don't feel like anybody gives a crap about them. And so I'm kind of on a mission here of making sure that no matter where you are, like, we're intentionally giving a crap to other people or intentionally trying to help them feel appreciated, feel like they belong, feel like they're part of us, that we value the input and the skill sets and gifts that they bring to our organization. Like that, if we start there, leadership becomes so much easier. If we start there, meeting our KPIs, getting products out the door, increasing in sales, it just becomes easier because people like being part of our culture. And it all begins with giving a crap. And crap is actually an acronym. It stands for celebration, recognition, appreciation, and praise. C-R-A-P, celebrate, recognize, appreciate, and praise. It's just intentionally taking a moment every single day to celebrate somebody, to recognize something they've done, to show your appreciation, right? To praise them for the quality work that they've done or the attitude they come in with. We can do it in a million different ways. In fact, if they hop on my website, I've got a handout. It's called 100 Days of Crap. And that's the challenge I'm trying to get people to do. It's like, can you accept 100 days of intentionally giving a crap to people? And on that handout, like, people are like, well, what do I do? What do I do? Great. I got 100 ways. Like, some of us, one's called crappy listening. So for this day, you're just going to find one conversation and like intentionally listen to the person. Remove distractions, be there 100% focused, like just really be there. Another one I have, it's called Crap Locally. And this is like, go down to your local downtown and buy some kind of little trinket or gift or sweet from your local organization and bring it to your guys or gals at work, and share that with somebody, right? Crapping locally. So there's 100 different kinds of things. I've got one called Crap in the Air. And this is one that I personally use. I hop on airplanes every so often. And flight attendants actually are not paid until you're in the air. So all that work that they do of like getting people on and the bins and closing, all that stuff, that's free work. And I appreciate that what they go through. I've seen the messes they go through. So I'll be in the airport and I buy a little baggie of chocolates and I write a little note and that's my crap for the day, right? That's how I crap in the air. I give it to them and I say, hey, I appreciate helping us fly safely and on time. I know the work it takes and it means something for them. They get on the intercom sometimes, like, "Hey, Jason Hunt in seat 27A, we appreciate you." You know,
I don't
do it for that. That's
right.
Just,
oh yeah, but to know it affects
that just,
them,
that does it mean something for them, right? When they do those kinds of things, yeah.
Oh yeah, I love that. So the lost my train of thought on that one because that's such a great idea of what
it is.
I like
and
about it, this. Go ahead.
And I'm just going to share that. I mean, it is a movement. I'm really trying to get people to intentionally, because you can crap as a parent, you can crap as a leader, you can crap as a coworker, you can crap as a neighbor. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. This is a habit, right? It's a frame of mind. It's a mindset that we have that every day we're going to take just 15 minutes or less. That's all it takes, 15 minutes or less, and intentionally do one thing that celebrates, recognizes, appreciates, and praises somebody else, right? So I create a whole website, giveacrap.net. You can actually go on giveacrap.net. You can go there if you're interested. The downloads are right there. You can get everything that you need to be part of this movement.
What I love about this is that for a lot of people, they don't know where to start. So you give them an easy place to start. There are lots of choices, which one feels right to them. But eventually, as they keep doing this, it just becomes easier. It starts to become, like you said, it's a habit. And now you start thinking about it. You start seeing opportunities to show that you give a crap. I love that. What are, let's say, the parting words of advice that you would like to leave with people?
I think I'd like to share this. The biggest lesson that I've learned in building this business. I'm an achiever. So when you think about like the Myers-Briggs strengths, all that kind of wonderful stuff, achiever comes up as one of my top characteristics, which means I'm going to drive till I get things done. I'm going to drive till I become successful. I'm going to drive until it works. And if I could give any advice, it would be that achieving things is really great, but what's even more important are the impacts we can make along the way. And again, that's not a natural thing that comes to me. But if I think back on where I've been and the experience that I've had, the most important and the most memorable moments haven't been when I achieved X number of dollars in revenue. I mean, those are nice to achieve, but that's not really where I feel happiest at. It's where I've really made a difference in somebody's life. It's where, you know, somebody in the training session will come out, even after the first session, they'll come up like, "Oh man, Jason, you know, this was so helpful. I was even thinking today about how much I didn't like my job as a leader. I just wanted to go back as the operator in the plant. But you know what? You've given me a little bit of inspiration to come back tomorrow. And I'm going to try things a little bit differently. I think I could really make a difference in the lives of the people that I lead." It's those kinds of moments, right? So if we approach business and our entrepreneurship and everything that we do with like a money and mindset KPI kind of thing going on, I just don't think that's the right way to do it. I don't. I tried it. It's got me a little bit where I am, but really what drives me now and really what has been the catapult to the next leveling my business has been the care aspect of it, right? Am I making a difference in people's personal lives? Because here's the deal, Chris. If I can help somebody be a better leader at work, it means they're a better father at home or a better mother at home. It means they're a better community member. It means they're a better volunteer at church or whatever. They're better because I've helped them become better, a better leader. And I don't care what work you're involved in. I don't care what business or industry that you have. We need to boil it down to what's the personal impact we're trying to make and focus on that. And I think if you can focus on that, all the rest of the stuff just comes into play.
Yeah, it's all about the passion. So where can people go to learn more about you and where can they go to buy these books?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I'm on LinkedIn, Jason A. Hunt. You can check me out on LinkedIn at Jason A. Hunt. If you want to join the Give a Crap movement, giveacrap.net is a great place to go. My book series is called Uncommon Leadership. So if you go into uncommonleadershipseries.com, you can be able to get the series of book, uncommonleadershipseries.com. And then for my website, you know, want to hop on and see what else I kind of do. The website for my personal website is isquaredleadership.com. So EYE squared, squared.com. Sorry, I squared leadership, leadership.com. And if you go on I squared leadership.com, that'll take you right to my website, which has all these different resources on it too, that you can view to get into.
Great. And I'll make sure all these are in the show notes as well. So it makes it easy for people. Jason, thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, it's been wonderful, Chris. I appreciate the questions. They're well thought out, and the opportunity to be able to share hopefully a little bit of value to people that would be helpful for them.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Pivot Perspectives with your host, Chris O'Byrne. Please leave your feedback and visit strategicadvisorboard.com to get the latest and greatest business advice on the planet. Follow us on social media for updates, and we will see you on the next episode.